From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Let me ask you this question. Is Vladimir Putin a war criminal?
That was Republican Senator Marco Rubio Wednesday questioning President-elect Donald Trump's designee for Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson.
I would not use that term.
Based on your knowledge of Russian leaders and Russian politics, do you believe these activities could have happened without the knowledge and the consent of Vladimir Putin?
I'm not in a position to be able to make that determination. That's indicated in the report, but I know there's additional classified information
You've engaged in significant business activities in Russia, so I'm sure you're aware that very few things of a major proportion happen in that country without Vladimir Putin's permission. So I ask, based on your views of Russian politics and your experience, is it possible for something like this involving the United States elections to have happened without Vladimir Putin knowing about it and authorizing it?
I think that's a fair assumption.
You are still not prepared to say that Vladimir Putin and his military have violated the rules of war and have conducted war crimes in Aleppo.
Now, those are very, very serious charges to make, and I would want to have much more information before reaching a conclusion. I understand there is a body of record in the public domain. I'm sure there's a body of record in the classified domain, and I think in order to deal with a serious question like this,
Mr. Tillerson, what's happened in Aleppo is in the public domain. The videos and the pictures are there.
Fully informed before advising the president.
Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson at a Senate confirmation hearing Wednesday. The contradictions of late-stage capitalism abound, which should be the cue for genuine radicals to fight both the Democratic and Republican parties, which means kicking the Democrats while they're down. So says BlackAgendaReport.com's Margaret Kimberly in this week's Freedom Rider article, Contradiction in the Time of Trump. We spoke with her via Skype from New York Thursday. Margaret, nice to chat with you today.
Thank you, Don.
So this week's column, Contradiction in the Time of Trump. Man, contradiction should have like several S's to show multiple plurals. There's so many.
Yes, it's an interesting time, as we've seen. I was moved to write this when I found out that Sean Hannity from Fox News was going to interview Julian Assange. And I never thought of Fox News people as being fans of Assange.
Right.
But Assange has now ended up playing this role of helping to take down the Democrats, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank you.
And so we have these contradictions. And meanwhile, Democrats, people who, including people who call themselves progressives and leftists, are suddenly quoting the CIA in helping to make the allegations about Trump's being under the influence of Russia or the Russians interfering in the election. Suddenly people who never would have quoted the CIA before are doing so. And I think this is all an indication that the system is under great stress, that we are, in fact, at that end stage of capitalism. And the contradictions are acute all over the world. Here in the United States, we had a supposedly liberal Democrat who is one of the biggest practitioners of the trade deals and the neoliberalism that has taken so many jobs out of the country and away from Americans. And the Republican, who is supposed to be the right winger, the one campaigning against the trade deals and at least speaking about, it's not clear how he would do it, but at least speaking about bringing living wage jobs back to the United States. So this isn't, these things like this are indications that we are at a very critical moment in world history. The Brexit vote in England shows that this is a worldwide phenomenon, that working people in England said no more trade deals and told the elites no thank you, and defied what the pollsters said and defied what the elite consensus was. So this is something that a moment that we need to seize, and we need to make some of these contradictions all the more acute and make this country ungovernable, and ungovernable by the Democrats. People are now saying that in an anti-Trump effort. But I think it's very important that we kick the Democrats while they're down and bring things to a head in a way that is positive, because, you know, it's a system. When a system ends, people get hurt, and I don't want to be casual about it, but we need to make sure as few people as are hurt as possible, and that more people are helped. So we have to seize this moment and help push some of these contradictions along.
You know, Tony Montero talks about where we're at right now as like epical change, perhaps, that the, you know, not just the neoliberal version or neocon version of U.S. policy domestically and foreign policy, respectively, are coming to an end, but this is epical in terms of capitalism itself. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of historical events for sure. We've got, on the one hand, you know, 67 years ago next month, that Joe McCarthy came out and said there were more than 200 members in the State Department that were known communists. Now we've got instead, they're saying the president-elect is basically a, you know, a Russian dupe. And they're calling Russia fascist. So, and they call Trump fascist. So they sort of meld Hitler and Stalin together and make the incoming president a dupe of that. You've got in the Philippines, the first time in 119 years, the U.S. is, the military domination of that country is being not just challenged, but perhaps coming to an end. Turkey is, you know, apparently looking east instead of west. China and Russia have a strategic alliance, as described by them, created essentially by the Obama administration attacking both of them simultaneously over the past 8 years, and just major sea changes all across. And then you invoke the Brexit vote. You have even going back before that, what happened in Greece with the rise and the election of Syriza, Podemos, and you know, all similar groups across Europe are on the rise, along with the right wing. Just major changes going on, and the empire lining up behind Clinton during the election and just lining up to throw tomatoes and bricks with razor blades on the outside at Trump on a daily basis, joined by the left, as you point out.
Yeah, and well, it's because we don't have a real left, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
And so people express their frustrations through nationalism. Through, like, such as Brexit, or through Trump, and through what many people are calling white nationalism, but and I know that much of Trump's appeal was racial in nature, but I also believe that people wanted a change and were looking to see an outsider. But I wanted to point out something that you just touched on about these efforts to make Trump a Russian, to say, claim he is a Russian agent. This is really incredible. This shows you how far gone the system is. The American elite consensus is that the U.S. cannot thrive unless it runs the whole world, and other countries must be our allies, or actually vassal states, more
right,
like,
yeah.
Or be crushed. And Russia will not go along. Russia has its own interests, and why shouldn't it? So Russia must be crushed. Russia has huge reserves of oil and gas, and it's the last energy-producing state that is not a vassal state of the U.S., a part of NATO or some other alliance. And so that's what this is all about. And in an effort to crush Russia, the Obama administration, Democrats, Republicans, the corporate media have all joined together to demonize Putin, to demonize Russia, to make up lies about Trump, of all the things to talk about. It is of concern that someone like Jeff Sessions will be attorney general. But that's not what the Democrats care about. They don't care about that.
Of course not.
The things that should concern us about Trump, they are concerned about expanding the American empire and risking war with Russia in an effort to do it. So this is what people should be paying attention to. But instead, unfortunately, everyone has succumbed to this government propaganda.
You know, speaking of contradictions, 50 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King was accused of being a Russian dupe. Now, if you distill the accusations against Trump down to the core, essentially the Ku Klux Klan and a bunch of white nationalists are Russian dupes. What happened?
Well, it's just crazy. Now they're trying to, if you read the New York Times, every day there's a new charge against Russia. Now they're claiming that Vladimir Putin is the, you know, like the Grand Wizard of the KKK. And white supremacists love Russia. I mean, anything and everything, no matter how seemingly ridiculous, is used to try to delegitimize Trump and make it impossible for him to do what he said he was going to do. So yesterday, he says, and I'm sure the pressure is just too much, that he thinks the Russians hacked. I don't believe that he thinks that.
Yeah, nor do
at
I.
At all.
Yeah, yeah.
And during the confirmation hearings that have begun, his choice for Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was testifying before the Senate yesterday, and Marco Rubio kept asking him, don't you think Vladimir Putin is a war criminal? Now think about this. Who invaded Iraq and killed 1 million people?
Mm-hmm.
That was an American president.
That's right.
Who destroyed Libya? The outgoing American president. Who can, and they can legitimately be called war criminals. Putin hasn't invaded any place.
That's right.
And it's very interesting that they want to call Russia fascist. Meanwhile, Ukraine is run by neo-Nazis, by people who are openly fascist, and the U.S. cannot give them enough money, enough militaries, actually work to put them in power. And then they'll make up stuff about Putin being a fascist.
I know. It seems that Germany did, in fact, win World War II, and everybody in the world except the United States are fascists, although looking at both the foreign policy of the United States, including, by the way, that we have the same enemy, number one, that Hitler had, that's Russia, and our behavior, you mentioned Iraq and Libya, of course, Syria, the U.S., every time that they take any military action towards that country at all, it's a war crime. It's illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Look across the world. The coup in Brazil, they're behind that. Mm-hmm. The attempted coup the other day, yet again, in Venezuela, they're behind that. The actual coup that took place in Honduras and the one that took place in Paraguay and, you know, across the planet. The people that are killing millions over the last decade or so in Central Africa, those are all from the United States. And then, of course, Israel, every time it blows up Gaza, gets more weaponry from the United States. The bombing campaign against Yemen by Saudi Arabia, which each instance is a war crime in and of itself, guided by U.S. AWACS and all of that. And they're calling Marco Rubio, of all people, calling someone a war criminal.
Yes, it's just if it would be laughable if it weren't an indication of such great danger, because we desperately need a change with in America's role around the world. For decades now, the United States has been this gangster nation. I don't know what else to call it, but with the skillful propaganda. Others are made out to be the demons. Who destroyed Syria? The United States.
Right.
So who was backing Saudi Arabia as they sent terrorists into that country?
Mm-hmm.
Russia didn't come in until 2015. For 4 years, this effort to take Syria apart was going on. sponsored by the U.S. and its allies in the Gulf states, mostly, and NATO. And Russia comes in. Russia's the only one, by the way, abiding by international law, because the Syrian government asked for their help.
Right.
So they were the only ones legitimately involved. But fortunately, it seems that Syria is pretty much a wrap. I believe they will try to push Trump into doing something stupid there, but the U.S. is out. They're having peace talks. Syria, Turkey, which was part of the anti-Assad government effort, Putin has won them over. And so now Turkey and Russia and Iran, I'm not sure who I'm missing, they are discussing the future of Syria, and the United States is out, which is a good thing. That's a very good thing. But Americans, because of our lying media, have no idea the role that Vladimir Putin, this man that they're told to despise or make fun of or be afraid of, that he is the premier world statesman. He is the adult in the room. And because, as you pointed out, of the Obama administration's efforts, all of which most of which have failed, Russia and China are now very close and are working together to promote their interests, which is what they ought to be doing. But even as I've said many times before, because we have this servile corporate media, even when Americans attempt to get information, they still don't know what's going on in the world.
Another one of the contradictions or ironies that caught my eye this morning was a quote from Sarah Palin referring to CNN and some others as the formerly, what was it, that formerly known as mainstream media, that actually people are not, and she's pointing out basically that people don't believe the mainstream quote-unquote media anymore, and that their ability to influence opinion is not just waning, but almost absent at this point.
Well, that's why there's this frenzy to discredit anybody who calls what they say into question. Right after Election Day, a couple of days after Obama was in Europe, he was having a joint press conference with Angela Merkel in Germany, and he went on and on and on about fake news. And that's because the narrative has been discredited. They've discredited themselves. And people don't believe them, and that is terrifying to them, because that is one of the tools in their kit is propaganda. There's no other word for it. That's why they're going on and on about this: is it propaganda or not? And as we discussed last week, this official government propaganda organ that Obama signed into law, the Global Engagement Center. They are terrified that people, and now we can independently have access to information, and we can bypass them. And that is terrifying. And they go on, and this intelligence assessment about Trump, which allegedly proved his the influence of Russia, it was basically a rehash of accusations against RT, a Russian-based news network, which is mostly on the internet. Nobody watches it. It was even an old, they were so clumsy, it was even an old report. They mentioned programs on RT that haven't been on for a couple of years.
Abby Martin, for example. I mean, Abby Martin actually left, you know, there was some animosity, you know, between her and RT when she left, and yet they treated her as part of the clear and present danger.
Yes, I know, and it was a very public split. And but they, you know, that clearly, I guess that was a rush job. But that just shows you the desperation, the levels of desperation. And if nothing else, it's very clear that their world is in a precarious situation, but we need to create one of our own. And the worst thing that progressives can do now is try to uphold the Democratic Party. They are part of the problem. And the bigger problem is this collapsing system. And Trump won't be able to keep it together either. and perhaps he can rearrange the, you know, the chairs on the Titanic for a while. Right. But we have a systemic problem around the world. We have a climate change which is reaching a critical point, and I'm not exaggerating to say life on Earth is threatened. And people go on and on about Trump being a climate change denier. But so is Obama. You know, he talks a good game. Democrats always say they know that climate change is a fact, but they don't do anything about it. This is a man who increased oil production. The last climate change agreement actually allows the world temperature to rise.
Right.
So it's like, so Trump is not the only one who really doesn't believe in climate change. It's unclear if the Democrats really believe in if they really believe in anything. But that's what we're up against now. We're the ship is sinking, and it's, I think, the first and most important thing to do is acknowledge that that is the fact. And all of their machinations are an effort to keep the bubble from bursting.
You know, one of the things that, another contradiction, this is to me the primary one, you know, that I experience on a daily basis, is all these people who have been holding themselves out as progressives, they identify as progressives, not only are standing with the CIA, but mm-hmm. I could hear them from my couch yesterday cheering as Marco Rubio was tearing into Tillerson.
Yes, tearing into him from the right.
Yeah.
And it's so, you know, it's so interesting. This is something, and people don't even see this. Progressives used to like it when an American president reached out to other countries. This used to be a selling point with them, but now they just follow the dictates of the Democratic Party, and it's sad. And you know, we have Trump because of the Democrats. Because of their devotion to neoliberalism, they couldn't even go through the motion of telling voters that they wanted change. I was reading last week that it was only 70,000 votes in like three different counties that gave Trump the Electoral College victory. Excuse me, the Democrats aren't even competent anymore. They cleared the field for Hillary Clinton. They got rid of Bernie Sanders. They raised $1 billion for her. And she couldn't be bothered to campaign in Wisconsin and Michigan and western Pennsylvania and save the presidency, which she should have been able to capture against this man that we're told is so terrible and so stupid and so racist and misogynistic. And she couldn't even do it. If you have $1 billion, you couldn't get an additional 70,000 votes.
Right.
So, and these are the people who we should be dumping. There should be mass revulsion against the Democratic Party, but instead the response is to uphold them. And any fight against Trump has to be outside of the confines of the Democratic Party, or else it will fail.
Yeah, you know, people are focused on the popular vote, for example, that Clinton got 3 million more votes or whatever the number is than Trump did. But, you know, they ignore the fact that the Republicans secured, again, control of both houses of Congress. And, you know, the entire House was up for reelection. And you're talking congressional districts. They won a majority of those, a substantial majority of those, and also the state legislatures and the governor's houses are also controlled by the Republicans. In other words, there's been an across-the-board electoral rejection of the Democrats already by the voters, which are, of course, only about half of those eligible.
Yes, they have. The Republicans have successfully gerrymandered many districts across the country, and even though Democrats get more votes, they control state houses. They've created these safe seats for themselves. But my question, when, you know, people talk about, oh, the Republicans are so evil, they gerrymandered these districts, and my question is always, well, where were the Democrats?
Right.
The Democrats don't know how. They're not even a real political party anymore.
Right.
All they are deal makers for the 1%, and they're very basic political things that they are not interested in getting done. So here we are in 2017. We're just 3 years away from the next census, and that is the determining factor in determining how these lines are drawn in states across the country. Do the Democrats have a plan to counter what the Republicans did? Are they talking about it? Is anybody demanding it of them?
Right.
Nope. So we're going to have, and if no other reason, people should be rejecting the Democrats because they're losers. Literally, they had nothing left except the presidency, and they couldn't get 70,000 additional votes and keep that. And their response to their failure is to pull Trump apart and make it impossible for him to accomplish one of his signature policies, his change in foreign policy. But I don't really think they'll care about anything else, because that's what the Democrats do. They pretend to be the party of inclusion and diversity, but when the you-know-what hits the fan, they cannot be found.
And, of course, that's all true, the whole thing about the gerrymandering and all of that. And, of course, the Constitution favors minorities, particularly wealthy, landowning, white slaveholding minorities. That's what it was drafted to protect. But, you know, one of those institutions, the Senate, there's statewide elections, and the Republicans control the Senate also. You can't those are gerrymandered by the location of state boundaries, basically.
Yes, and so that's just a failure of the Democratic Party to have a coherent message that's appealing to people, and they just failed. So they could control the Senate again, but then, you know, when you look at it, what do we get when Democrats control Congress? Obama came into office with a nearly veto-proof, filibuster-proof majority in the Senate with control of the House, and what did we get?
Yep.
When they ran everything, did we get an increase in the minimum wage? No, we did not. Well, there was like 70 cents or some insulting figure. It was nowhere near the fight for 15 that they now claim to want to be a part of. Did they undo any of the things Republicans did to start privatizing the Postal Service? No, they didn't. All they got was Obamacare, which is now going to be done away with in some form or fashion by the Republicans, who are kind of in a jam because while it is certainly not adequate and certainly not affordable, there are millions of people who now depend on Obamacare for their health insurance coverage. So this signature achievement, and it was the one thing meant to shut you up. If anybody criticized Obama, I'm sure you have experienced this too.
Oh, yeah.
If you said, what has Obama done? Obamacare. That was the first words on every lip, and actually the only ones. And then their excuses made. The Republicans obstructed him. He really wanted to do more.
Yeah.
So this is where we are with a failed party trying to make it impossible for their successor to govern, but not even for noble motives, not even to stop him from doing the things that endanger our lives the most.
You know, and just the most interesting thing to me, Obama had a nearly filibuster-proof Senate back in 2009 and 2010, including the Massachusetts election. And the Republicans now, with a smaller majority, have a filibuster-proof Senate because the rules were changed, and the rules could have been changed in 2009, and yet they weren't. Then Obama could have had 2 years where every proposal that he put forward could have been approved by the Senate and House.
Yeah, and this is, the deal-making. That was Obama's thing. Obama doesn't really have any opposition, he doesn't really disagree with Republicans. He's a very conservative man. He loved to accommodate them. He loved to cut deals with them. And the situation we're in now is because of him and because of his failure. But you can tell how badly he failed by the way the propaganda is being ratcheted up about how wonderful he was and how brilliant he was. And, oh, my God, he gave a speech the other night, and his daughter missed the speech because she had to study for finals. I'm like, why is that a news story? But that is the fake news that they use to try to prop up what's falling apart.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com entitled Freedom Rider. This week's column, Contradiction in the Time of Trump. Margaret, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.